All right, welcome to Lakers Collective. This is the first time doing the intro. No Trevor here. The wheels are just going to completely fall off. We're going to completely lose control. But Trevor's traveling. Just me and Jovan this week. Obviously, we have the All-Star break, so we wanted to kind of mix it up and go big picture. So we're going to be doing player grades over the course of today and Thursday's show. Today, we're going to be focusing on the stars. So Luka, LeBron, and Austin. We also got a report from Dave McMenamin that the Lakers might potentially be interested in having LeBron back, which I think is an interesting discussion to have. I think there's a couple layers worth getting into there. Jovan, you're on the road again. Where are you at? How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm out here in Henderson, Nevada, spending some time with my son this week. So using the All-Star break for good time. But things are well, man. I'm just excited for the final third of the season. I don't like when people say second half of the season because we're already 50 plus games into it, right? We got the stretch run here, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, I was talking to my brother-in-law the other day, and he was like, I didn't know the NBA was going on. I'm like, dude, we're more than halfway through this thing. We've been going for a very long time. But this All-Star break is really, I just look at like the last real break before the final sprint, because now that you have the play-in tournament, it's like crazy post-deadline, like new evaluations of new players on new teams. Then you have like that stretch run, all the teams jockeying for position in the standings. Then you have the play-in. Then honestly, like, as you know, that first, especially now that you're covering the league at large through your channel as well this year, that first 2 weeks of the postseason is absolutely crazy when there's like three or four games every single night. But we're super excited to dig into it, guys. We'll keep it real simple. We're just going to go guy by guy through this list. We'll start with Luka. I think it's important to understand that we're going to be grading these guys, all of them, on a curve. Meaning, so Luka Doncic is going to be graded on the top tier superstar curve. LeBron and Austin will be guarded on that like secondary star curve. And when we get to role players, they'll be guarded, graded on that role player curve. I really just want to dig in individually to the guys in the roster and just kind of check in with where they're at this point in the season. So starting with Luka, 33-8-9 so far this year on 61% true shooting. Jovan, what grade would you give Luka for his season so far to this point?
I would give Luka an A minus. And to get specific here, it's a high A minus. For me, it's about like a 93%. So I'm on that A minus A borderline. I think he's had a great season overall. If you look at the numbers, he's, of course, leading the league in scoring, but also leading the league in free throw attempts. Second highest scoring average of his career, highest free throw attempt average of his career. And now that the three-point shot has regressed to the mean in a positive sense, there's very little to nitpick with him. I think the two thing, or I would say two things you could probably look at are the turnovers at times in some of their losses. He's had some high turnover games, and then also the defense at times, depending on the evening. But I think if we're grading him on that top tier superstar level, I don't think he has been quite on the Shea Jokic level, and basically every advanced metric backs that up. You could also look at the on off and see the splits between those two guys and their respective teams. Even a guy like Shea, who like the Thunder are winning the minutes with him off the floor, but like they're winning it at an even higher rate, obviously, with him on the floor. So, I think Luka's had a great season. I mean, just one player of the month. You look at January, you look at November, and I think December is the one thing for me that has kept this from just a straight up A. Like, I think if he did not have some of the dips, some of the lows that he had in December, this would have been an A grade for me. But I think overall, he's been the third or fourth best player in the world this season. I would probably go third, but I know some people might have him a bit lower on that list. But to me, he's right there behind Shea and Jokic, and I think he's delivered in terms of being the number one option on a team that could win a championship. The issue has been, I don't think the Lakers have a championship roster.
Yeah. So I had the exact same grade, A minus. And by the way, for everyone listening, Jovan and I did not share our grades beforehand. So I'll be really curious to see how this all kind of lines up. I 100% agree with you that I think he's been the third best player in the NBA this year. I don't think there's anybody really that has a case over him in that respect. It's interesting.
I think people throw out Giannis. That's the one guy that I've heard people throw out, but I would pick him over Giannis.
And Giannis has had availability issues. Mm-hmm. Like the jump shot hasn't been as good as it was last year. I would split Luka's season into like three segments. So there's the first segment, which is basically up to when he left for the birth of his child. So through December 1st, 16 games, 35-9-9 on 63% true shooting. Just like absolutely insane. We all remember that. Luka was killing everybody to start the year. Then he had this midseason slump, which basically ran for a 9-game stretch from December 7th to January 2nd. His percentages tanked. His volume tanked. He was 31 points per game, 7 rebounds per game, 8 assists, 57% true shooting, and 5 turnovers per game. That was when he was really losing control of the turnovers. That was that stretch where the bad stuff was really kind of undercutting a lot of the good that he was doing. But then he returned to form in a big way. And I've consistently on this show pointed at this as that second Memphis game, and kind of particularly the second half of that second Memphis game. It kind of felt like where everything clicked, when, especially with his step back three. And since then, last 17 games, 32-8-8. He's cut his turnovers down to 3.9 per game, shooting 39% from three on massive volume, back up to 63% true shooting. So not quite as good as he was at the very beginning of the year, but pretty close. And so really when you zoom out, it's really just that one bad stretch of games. And the Lakers, they lost some ground in that stretch. They were 5-4 in the 9 games that he played, but nothing too bad. And I'd argue for 75% of the games, so obviously if you just take that chunk out, for 75% of the games, he's been a bona fide top-tier superstar in any sense of the word. And, you know, he's going to get an A-minus because Shea and Jokic haven't had those kinds of like 3-week long stretches where they've looked bad. Obviously, Jokic has had the injury, and Shea's, you know, his team has lost some games where they've gone into a little bit of funk, but no one's blaming Shea for that. And Shea statistically has continued to perform really well. I was talking about this in my show this morning. I think, you know, because when you're looking at MVP, Luka's basically got no shot this year. He's currently like right around plus 2,000 at most sports books. With Luka, to win MVP, the main difference between him and Jokic and Shea is the floor. It's not really the ceiling. I was talking about it this morning. Like, I actually think Luka's ceiling might be higher than everybody's. And the main reason why is because his step back three. Like, his ability to consistently generate his own shot from three is something that both Shea and Jokic don't necessarily do very well. And so when you combine everything, like Luka's got the short range shot making that you expect to get from Jokic and Shea. He's 63% on those one-handed push shots like floaters, 53% on jump shots inside of 17 feet. He's super efficient at the rim. His thing is he can have turnover prone games and he can go really cold from three sometimes. And so like when Luka's got his 3-point shot going, and he's got his basket attacking going, and he's a better passer than Shea. Like, Luka's ceiling is every bit as high as those guys, if not even higher. It's just really the up and down nature of his game that I think if he addresses in the coming years, he'll have a better chance to compete for MVP. But by any measure, he's having an awesome season. His play type data is off the charts. He's run, according to Synergy, 1,294 pick and rolls, ISOs, and post-ups, generating 1.13 points per possession. That's insane. That's why the Lakers have a top three half-court offense. The only thing I'd add in the nitpicky department, you mentioned the turnovers, you mentioned the defense, 34% on catch-and-shoot threes this year. I'd love to see him get a little bit better on those catch-and-shoot ones. He's been good on the open ones. It's been mainly the more rushed contested ones. And there have been some times where LeBron and Austin have thrown him grenades and he's had to throw some tough, like late yes. shots up. But yeah, overall, like, I mean, I would argue he's been everything that the Lakers could have hoped for this season, better than he was last season. Clearly a guy who can go toe-to-toe with the top guys in the league. He just had that bad stretch. And frankly, I don't think that's going to be an issue when he gets to the postseason. I want to bounce it back to you with this. Do you think there's any credence to what I was saying that Luka's ceiling is every bit as high as the best guys in the league, if not a bit higher?
I think there's a lot there. I definitely think his ceiling is higher than Shea's, right? Like, I think the thing with Shea is he's just that consistent, you know, going to give you 28 to 35 every single night on 65%+ true shooting percentage, right? And there's just a steadiness that he you know, I'm not the first one to do this comparison, but he's like a metronome with sort of he just same output every single game, and sometimes it's going to be a little bit higher. But I think, you know, he's sort of in a certain range where the floor is really high, but the ceiling, I don't think is, I don't know if I'd have Shea even in the top three in terms of ceiling. Like, I think Giannis probably has a higher ceiling. Like, if you're just talking about like a game seven situation, you need like a monster legendary performance. I might have Shea closer to like fourth or fifth in my pecking order.
I'm with you on that.
There's a few guys I would put ahead of him. Yeah, I mean, I would agree. Like, I think Jokic is the one guy where I'm like, you know, his we've seen like a, what, 60-20-20, if I'm not mistaken, performance from him, or close to that. But I know Luka had a 60-20-10 as well. So, I mean, I think those two are maybe neck and neck in terms of their performance or ceiling. I think Luka being on the ball, you know, being more of a point guard, it does, like, we've seen Jokic, like, go back to game seven against OKC and some of the Lakers regular season performance against them last year. And you can, like, literally double team him all over the floor and prevent him from getting the ball. And so I guess there's like different ways you could try to take him out that you can't necessarily do the same way as Luka. But if we're talking like just everyone's at their peak 99th percentile, I think you can make a strong case for Luka to be number one or at worst number two.
Yeah, it's the step back three is just such an impossible shot to guard. You're basically just crossing your fingers and hoping he misses. And yeah, like Luka will sometimes bail you out and take a lot. Like the kind of variance that comes with Luka is tied to the shot profile. So like Shea and Jokic, if you just were to average their shot attempts by distance from the rim, they're just substantially closer to the rim. And so they're going to have a more consistent night to night type of efficiency. But frankly, when you're in a situation where a guy's going to 12 step back threes in a game and he makes seven or eight of them, like your hands are tied. And so I think Luka brings that combination of like scoring upside and playmaking that at his best, he can be the best. And I think that's really what you're looking at with Luka as an advantage against some of his peers. But overall, I know I was super critical of him in that bad stretch in the middle. And again, like that's just because you typically don't see that from the very best players in the world. But at the same time, I think overwhelmingly, he's been extremely good this year.
I also wonder, before we move on to the next player, like how much do you factor in what they've previously done? Because that's always something for me that's a little tough with the grades. Because looking at like Luka's per game averages or per possession, per 36, whatever you want to use, it's probably the second best season of his career behind 2023, 2024. If you go into some of the advanced metrics and you know, whether it's win shares per 48 or box plus minus or different things, like that's where it's probably closer to like somewhere like third or fourth best season of his career. So that's something I factor in a little bit of like, you know, he is approaching his prime and he is posting the highest usage percentage of his career. So he's having the most opportunity to post his best numbers to a degree. And there's a lot of context that goes into some of that stuff. But like that was also another thing that maybe I dinged like a little bit of right now, he's not having like his best season even compared to himself. But overall, I think to your point, like you take out the December stretch, I think it's clearly an A, if not an A+. And I think with more time, if we're having this conversation at the end of the season, or at least the end of the regular season, I would not be surprised if he's up to at least an A.
Yeah. And I think one of the big things I've got my eye on the rest of the year too is the availability piece. Like I think, you know, the 65 game rule is tricky because, you know, like for instance, I was looking at it this morning. You got so many guys between Jokic and Luka and Steph and Kawhi and Victor and all these dudes who like, they might all fail to qualify for all NBA. We might have some, like, you know, Danny Avdia might be third team all NBA because of
Cade
all
Cunningham is going to win MVP just like kind of by default.
Yeah, exactly. Like it could get really weird here. So like at a certain point, I think, you know, even though I disagree with it as it pertains to the awards, because it's just getting too tricky. And I think that the availability stuff comes more down to the schedule than it does to the players being willing to play. I also think that, you know, for a top tier superstar, you want your guy to play 70 games. You want your guy to be in that range. And so I think one of the things I'll have my eye on with Luka the rest of the year is just his availability. Like you've got this all-star break, you've reset your body, find a way to manage your body and be healthy the rest of the season. Moving on to LeBron. Before we get into his grade, let's dig into this report. So I have a really simple kind of opinion on this. Like, we've talked about it at length on this show. The Lakers need three starters. So if you go into this summer and you make a deal for a center, but you're unable to pull off a deal for a three or a four, and you're kind of like just stuck in that like purgatory for an additional trade cycle. If you could somehow convince LeBron to come back and be your starting four for just one more season as a bridge, I think the Lakers would be stupid to let him go. But at the same time, like, there's the free agency piece in terms of tying up money, and you don't want him to take on too much of that available cap space. So, like, I understand that it needs to make sense for everybody. But, like, even when everyone was saying, like, oh, I think LeBron's done with the Lakers, I certainly was giving that legitimacy in the sense that it would, I wouldn't be shocked if LeBron, like, signed with Cleveland next year or if LeBron retired. But I thought it was crazy that people just pretended like there was no chance he would come back. Like, there was obviously going to be a situation where either Cleveland says no, or LeBron's family is like, hey, dude, we don't want you to move. You know, or if he was just like, okay, fine, I'll take this discounted deal. You guys need a starting small power forward. I'll be that guy for one more year. But at the same time, I do think the chances of him leaving are more than ever, just simply because the circumstances kind of have to line up right. What's your take on this whole situation?
Well, as I like to say, two things can be true. So the Lakers could want LeBron back, but and even in the story, it was presented as like that contract will have a big say. It'll be a big determining factor in terms of what the Lakers' options are this summer, which is true. But I think that the caveat within LA wanting him back is it is, you know, LeBron back on a discount. And is LeBron open to that, and how big of a discount is he willing to, like, that's my follow-up to all this, is just like, at what price, right? Sure, if LeBron is willing to sign a minimum contract, I'm sure the Lakers would be open to that and entertain that. But what if LeBron wants $15 million? What if LeBron wants $20 million? What if LeBron wants $25 million? I don't think he's going to get $50 million again. I don't think he's going to get $40 million again. You look at the teams that have cap space, whether it's the Bulls, it's the Nets, it's the Clippers. I don't see an obvious fit for LeBron. And I don't think he's going to take $40 million from the Brooklyn Nets to go play with that team, right? So it's got to be a situation that makes sense. And as the options, you know, currently are, none of those teams have more than the non-taxpayer MLE. And some of them are going to just be hamstrung to the point of only being able to offer a minimum contract. So I think that there is a reality here of, if LeBron is back next season, unless there's some sort of sign-in trade, which then if you're taking on a player in a sign-in trade, you are hard capped at that first apron and you got to navigate that. Realistically, he's going to either be signing some sort of exception or potentially even a minimum contract if he really wants to go to a situation where they just don't have the flexibility. So I say all that to say, like, I think I do think there's truth in the Lakers wanting him back, but I think the natural follow-up or second layer of that is just at a major discount, right? And that was like sort of touched on in the piece, but I do think that's they don't want him back on a $50 million or $40 million contract. And even if he is accepting a discount, but it's not quite a minimum contract, that does influence how much cap space the Lakers have, because right now they're projected to have $51 million if they trade that 2026 pick. If they keep the 2026 pick, they're only at $48 million, and that's with rescinding the rights to Rui Hachimura, who they might end up keeping anyway. So that's like something I feel like people haven't really talked about, is if they keep Rui, even if they agree to something like quickly and get that number, let's just say 15 million, 16, 18, whatever it is, that's a notable chunk of their cap space. And now we're talking about like 30 million to play with, either trading for someone or signing someone. So they've got a lot of things to figure out in terms of their cap space. But I think that the caveat here, like, it's easy to say, yeah, we want LeBron back. And then that kind of puts the ball in LeBron's court in terms of, does he want to return? How much does he want to be a Laker? But I think the reality is they want LeBron back on a discount. And then it's on LeBron. How much of a discount are you willing to take to stay?
Yeah, you know, I would imagine there will be a universe where essentially LeBron will wait to see how things shake out during that first few weeks of July and obviously the draft. And when it's all said and done, the dust will settle and the Lakers will either have spent all of their cap space and essentially be able to offer LeBron, you know, to go over the cap because they obviously have his rights. they can offer him some amount of money that would be enough to appease LeBron, but not so much that it hamstrings the flexibility of the team at the deadline. So like keeping them under the luxury tax line, for example, like I could see them finding like some sweet spot. And let's say that number is 20 million, just for the sake of argument. Then what they'll do is LeBron will look at the situation. He'll be like, do I want to stay with LA for 20, go to the Cavs on an MLE, or retire? And LeBron will make his decision from there. And I think he'll seriously consider the Lakers. Like, frankly, like if the Lakers can successfully bring in a legit talent upgrade at like two positions and still offer LeBron 20, I think he'd take it. I think he would, because if he thinks Luka's given him a really good chance to win, and if he likes the roster around it, I could see him being like, I'm staying in LA. This is great, you know? But at the same time, like if it's one of those things where they can offer him money, but the team is every bit as limited as they were this year, I could see him being like, I'm not going to put my body through this again. If we don't have any chance to win, let me go to Cleveland, right? Or if the dust settles and Rob's like, here's your, you know, 12 million or 8 million, I could see him being like, all right, well, I'm going to Cleveland. So I think a lot of it is going to be everything's up in the air. We'll see how the dust settles with the draft pick, with the trades that they make this summer, with the free agent signings that they make. And if they're able to maintain a small chunk, I think it's totally reasonable for LeBron to be like, I want all of that chunk. I like everything that's left over is mine. It's what I deserve. I think that's fair. But if that chunk gets too small, that's where I think he's going to consider looking at a team like Cleveland. And, you know, frankly, if the Lakers can't pull off the talent upgrades that they need, I think he might view Cleveland just as a better winning situation. But I think people, you know, in general, I think people underestimate how little people want to move. Like, moving sucks. And
I just moved 3 weeks ago, and yeah, I can tell you it sucked.
And I moved last summer, and yeah, I've done it like 7 or 8 times in the last 10 years. It sucks. And I guarantee you, if LeBron thinks he can get a reasonable amount of money for a reasonable chance to compete in LA, I think he'd stay. And like, again, like there's all this talk about like wanting the LeBron era to be over. And I get it, because specifically some of the antics, the Rich Paul comments before the season, some of the Rich Paul stuff on the podcast, I get that part. But from all indications, LeBron in the locker room has been an active participant. I mean, their head coach, JJ, again, came out and said, you can never question this guy's commitment. That's literally what he said. So like, as long as they stop the shenanigans off the court with whatever Rich Paul's doing, and I would imagine if LeBron came back for an age 42 season, no one's going to be leveraging anything. It's like, play basketball and then you're done, you know? So like, frankly, if the cards align, it makes sense for everybody. If LeBron still has basketball to play and he loves LA, and if the Lakers don't have a starting small forward or power forward, I think they'd be foolish not to try to kind of make ends meet at some point there in the middle. But again, to your point, so much of it's going to come down to just what they end up spending this summer. If they end up getting Peyton Watson for $30 million, like, yeah.
There's a path here of if they just keep LeBron and Rui, even let's just say LeBron, even on like the conservative side, $15 million, $20 million, let's just say it's like a lower figure. Between that and Rui, you're easily at $30+ million of your, you know, $50 million in cap space. So now you have like under $20 million to play with to either sign somebody or to acquire someone via trade, and you're basically running back the same roster. So I think that there is an element here of you probably have to pick between LeBron and Rui to a degree, right? Unless LeBron is taking a minimum. And to be clear, just because I saw some comments in the chat, I'm not saying LeBron is a minimum caliber player. He is clearly not a minimum caliber player, as we're about to get into. I'm just saying, if you look at what's actually out there for him, it's going to be, unless he just wants to, you know, grab the bag and go to a lottery level team like the Bulls or the Nets, which he's not going to do, it's going to be exceptions or a minimum salary slot. That it's not about like his value. It's just about what's out there right now. Like, several teams that had projected cap space ended up making moves at the deadline, which shifted how much cap space they have. So there are some teams in that like 20-25 range that maybe he gets a little bit more from them than he would from the Lakers. But like, realistically, as we're breaking it down, it's either a heavy discount with the Lakers or, you know, potentially a minimum or an exception somewhere else. So he's gonna have to weigh all that, but that's just the reality of what's out there from like a cap space perspective.
Yeah, because once they pay Austin, it doesn't make sense to pay LeBron $50 million. You know what I mean? And I think that's completely reasonable. Like, yeah, if it was purely in a vacuum and you were just talking about his value, I still think LeBron's in that like $35-40 million type of player level. Like, he's still, we're going to talk about him here in a minute. He still brings a lot to the table, but yeah, ultimately business decisions have to be made. So let's start with the player grade segment here for LeBron. 22 points, 6 rebounds, and 7 assists per game this year, 59% true shooting. What grade would you give LeBron to this point in the season compared to other like secondary type stars around the league?
This is the hardest one for me to grade on the entire roster. Because I think there's so many arguments you can make for a higher grade or a lower grade. Overall, I lean a B with LeBron, and that might seem a little low because if we're grading on like an age curve or just like relative to his peers at this stage of their careers, he's an A++, right? Like, yeah, he's 100th percentile of, even compared to like 30, you know, late 30s guys, he's in unprecedented territory with how great he's been. For me, the part I kind of struggle with is like, I think if we're grading him, and I'm going to have this breakdown similar with Austin, if we're grading him as like a number two, who's also making $53 million, I think he's closer to like a B- on the season. If we're grading him as a number three and we're elevating Austin to a number two, I think he's probably an A- for me, right? So that's where I kind of split the difference there of depending on, honestly, I think it's going to be depending on the matchup, depending on the night. He and Austin can vacillate between who's number two, who's number three, and Luka's the clear number one. But I think like it's been trending upward, right? So that there's also to your, as we had with the Luka discussion, there's different phases of LeBron's season, and he certainly had a slow start, and more recently, you know, then he had a great stretch. I think he had a stretch up until recently where he was pretty consistently like 25 or under for almost 10 straight games. And the jumper was really struggling. The efficiency wasn't quite there as much. And then he had an amazing end to, you know, the pre-All-Star break with that game that he had against Dallas. It was his most points in a month, his most rebounds in 2 months, and his most assists in 3 months. So really put it together, first triple-double of the season. I have a feeling you're probably going to be higher on LeBron than I am. But I think that the big things for me have been like, I think that there's been some real defensive slippage, and people can point to Luka and Austin as well. And I think it's just an issue with the big three in general. But with LeBron, I hold him to a slightly higher standard just because I think he's more physically capable than both Luka and Austin, despite being 41 years old. I mean, he's still far more athletic than either one of those guys. And then two, I go back to last year, and this is where I do factor in. I'm not going to factor in like prime Cleveland or LA or Miami LeBron, but I do compare him to last season, and the numbers are down across the board, but you know, some of that, again, you could factor in no training camp, no preseason, you know, the slow start. But I also think like defensively, he's just not been quite at the level that he was last year. And he was a huge reason why the Lakers went 20-4 over that stretch, league's best defense. I don't think he has sniffed that level of defense outside of maybe a couple stretches here or there. So I think he's conserved a lot of energy on the defensive side of the floor. And to me, just based on him being the most capable defender of the three, I would almost welcome him taking a lesser role offensively and focusing more on the defense and the rebounding. The rebounding is the other thing here, where that game against Dallas was only his second double digit rebounding game of the season. And I think that's been an area where he has not been quite as strong. And like, that's typically been a LeBron thing, is he's always in that like 9 to 12 rebound range. And I know he's had a lot of like 8 and 9 rebound games, but I think the Lakers, especially in losses, have done a poor job defensive rebounding. And I think he's been a part of that, but it's just tough to grade him because again, he's 41 and the Lakers should not be relying on him as much as they are defensively. It's just the fact of the matter is with the roster construction, they kind of have to, especially if you're going a little bit smaller with the starters. So he was the toughest player for me to grade. You could tell me a B-, you could tell me an A-, and I don't really disagree. I just personally settled on a B.
So I actually ended up lower than you. I ended up with a B-.
Wow, okay. I was not expecting that.
It's super complicated, like you said. There's I'm glad you mentioned the phases. I did the exact same thing. I kind of put his season into three phases. His first six games, so call it the ramp up, 14 points per game, 47% true shooting. Not a whole lot going on there. That was a stretch where he passed the ball really well. He averaged 8 assists and was really taking care of the basketball during that stretch of the season. Then we had the vintage run. So his next 16 games, this was from December 7th to January 15th, 26-6-7 on 64% true shooting. That's like vintage incredible. LeBron, yeah. Like incredible stuff, right? Last 14 games, though, 21-6-7 on 56% true shooting. That's been really where we've seen the jump shot in particular tail off. That, you know, really everything to me is graded on the curve of not just him being a secondary star, but to your point, him making as much money as he's making. And like, there again, there's ways you can frame this positively and negatively. So for example, like, I think LeBron has made a lot of really big plays late in games this year. I think he's been an excellent clutch player. Big rebounds, big defensive stops, big cuts, big catch and shoot threes, big, you know, 4-on-3 reads. He's helped them pull out a lot of really good close game type of situation sequences. I give him credit for that. Holding down units by himself. This, like, the LeBron by himself units have been some of the best Laker basketball this year. So They've run 683 possessions with LeBron on the floor with Austin and Luka off. They are plus 6.4 points per 100 possessions in those lineups. I think that those have been a real, you know, foundational strength for the Lakers this year. So I'd give LeBron credit for that. But specifically when he's on the floor with the other stars, the two things that rise to the surface there is, like, you can tell defensively he's just not as revved up in those units as he is when he's with all the younger athletes, which is frustrating because that's actually when they need him to play defense the most, is with those groups, as you mentioned, because the other players on the floor are not as up to that, like, kind of challenge, so to speak. In general, too, like, I feel like there's been a slip, just an overall focus from LeBron. Like, he's just making a lot of mistakes. And I want to be consistent with this because this is something I used to criticize Russell Westbrook for all the time. When you're building a highlight reel each game a 3 or 4 times where you just get back cut or you don't watch your man on a rebound, like, that does undercut your success in that, like, kind of good play, bad play scale that you're constantly kind of feeding through. And I just think in general, LeBron, there's been turnover issues as of late as well. I just think he's been a little more mistake prone this year than I would like to see for a player who is, you know, making as much money as he's making. The second piece of it is the jump shooting. He's having a terrible jump shooting season by any standard. All of his jump shots are getting just 0.87 points per shot. He's shooting just 31-for-96 on catch and shoot threes this year. His volume is down too. He's only taking 2.7 of them per game. I'd like to see that closer to like 4 under the circumstances. So, like, it's weird because I think he's had a stretch where he's been awesome, like we talked about. He's clearly been very good when he's on the floor by himself as he's been anchoring those defensive focus kind of transition units. And, like, there's a lot of late game playmaking that's helped the Lakers close out games. But I'm giving him a B- because I just want to see more complimentary play from him alongside the other stars. More aggressive catch and shoot play, more reliable catch and shoot play, more effort and energy and focus and defense and on the glass. Again, like, it's all relative. I don't worry about LeBron. It's hard to explain. Like, I think LeBron's going to be good in a playoff series. I just do. Like even last year against Minnesota with his adductor injury, he still was just the most reliable non-Lucas. I mean,
that game 3 performance.
Yeah.
That was classic LeBron.
The huge defensive plays down the stretch of game 4. Like LeBron, I'm not worried about him, but if we're strictly talking about how he's performed in the regular season context, I do think he's left some meat on the bone, especially in those, like, other units alongside the other stars where I'd like to see him get better.
I also think to that point, because right when you have 3 stars, like, there's going to be someone takes a bit of a back seat, right? And you have other guys contribute in other ways. I think if he's not going to be as engaged and active on the defensive side and on the glass, then we start comparing him more offensively to Luka and to Austin. And I think he's just clearly been the third best of those 3 offensively, right? What you look at shooting metrics, or you just look at the overall production, or some of the on-off stuff. And it's like, if he's going to, you know, kind of be more in line with those guys in terms of like the rebounding or the defense, although Luke, I mean, for the record, Luke has been a great defensive rebounder this season. I think then if we start just judging him based on the offense, like that's where I think he actually suffers a little bit, because if he was giving this production with better rebounding or with better defense, then I think he's closing the gap there and maybe even surpassing Austin as like the second best player on the team. But I think there's been that drop off on the glass and defensively, in addition to some of the efficiency drop off and just overall production drop off. So that's where I think there's like a little bit of a delineation there of he's supposed to be the guy who can do more, because he, again, even despite being year 23, 41 more minutes than anybody, he is far more athletic than Luka or Austin have ever been or will ever be. And so like, I do hold him to a certain standard on the defense. Like, I just think his ceiling defensively is still higher than either one can get to, right? Like his elevator goes up higher than them, but can, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe he's holding it for the playoffs. Maybe he's holding it for, we know LeBron always closes the season strong. He always has that really impressive finish to a season. He likes ramping up for the stretch run. So maybe we'll see that here coming out of the All-Star break. But I think that plus, as you mentioned, the turnovers and the shooting, like, he needs one of those to be better in terms of like decreasing the turnovers and or the jumper falling at least at like a league average rate. Right now he's under 31% on threes.
Yeah, him getting up to like being like a dependable catch and shoot guy is the big one for me. Like, I would argue that's one of the like top three or four biggest swing factors between the Lakers being like a real upset threat in the postseason and not. He on a team that's desperate for jump shooting, and when he's going to be off ball as much as he is, he's got to hit those shots. And I'm glad you pointed out the shot creation. Like, we're going to get to Austin here in just a minute, but like, both Austin and Luka's play type data is off the charts good, like some of the best in the entire league good. And LeBron's been below a point per possession in his self-created stuff. There's been some bright spots. Like, I've liked the work out of the post. Obviously he's actually been sneaky a good dribble drive guy this year. He's like, if for being an older forward and being a guy in years past who seemed to not really have that gear, like, he's beating people off the dribble, which I think is real value. And I do think his shot creation data gets a little dragged down by the lineups he's playing with, because he's playing with defensive focused lineups, which actually are working. So that's, you know, that's what they do. Like, the Laker lineups with LeBron on the floor with Austin and Luka off have a defensive rating right at about 109, which is really, really strong, which is a big part of why those units have been winning. But yeah, I think all the stuff you mentioned is completely fair. I've got my eye on the jump shot. 3 for 7 from three at the All-Star game. Hit a clutch one in that first win versus the younger American stars there down the stretch. So like, that's the big one I've got my eye on. All right, before we move on to Austin, we are going to take a second to shout out our sponsor, Sleeper. Remember, if you guys use code HMA, they have a 100% deposit match up to $100.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Again, guys, code HMA, 100% deposit match up to $100. All right, let's get into Austin. Another guy that's just complicated. Like, it depends on how you kind of frame the discussion, but I'm going to kick it to you first, Jovan. He has this year averaged 25 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists, 67% true shooting. Obviously, some availability concerns. Obviously, also the upside when he's been by himself. What grade would you give Austin for this season?
I would give Austin an A for me. And the reason I mean, he's posting career best numbers across the board. And it's not even just, sometimes you look at a guy like they're posting career high numbers, but it's directly related to the minutes, right? Then you look at the per 36 minutes, you look at the per possession data, and it's like actually kind of in line with their career numbers. It's just that they played 4 more minutes and all of a sudden they're posting 4 more points per game, 2 more assists, whatever. With Austin, there's been like a real jump in both the playmaking and the scoring. And I think the most underrated thing about him, which to me makes him such a good fit next to Luka is the scalability, which we've seen at times this season where he can scale up to be the number one against the Sacramento, against the Minnesota, against the Toronto. And the Lakers had some big road wins and also some big wins in general with it. Like, I mean, just the Philly game, right? Second game back from injury, drops 35 and really takes over that game and swings it in the second half. But then he can also scale down and be the number three and fit next to Luka and LeBron and play off of those two guys. So I think some guys just don't have the ability to scale up and scale down that easily. And I think Austin is a guy who can play on and off the ball. Similar to Luka, had a somewhat slow start to his season from a shooting perspective, but has regressed to the mean in that sense and is now, you know, almost at 37% on a slight increase in volume compared to last season. So I think for me, and you know, I've been high on Austin since his rookie season. He has taken a leap this season that I did not foresee. Like before that first calf injury that he suffered, we were talking about him. I think you had mentioned him as like a top 15 guy in the league. And I think there was a real case for that at that point. He a clear all-star. Like if he doesn't get hurt, I think he makes the all-star, especially seeing some of the reserve picks or like the replacement picks they had. I think Austin would have made it. And you know, was probably a third team All-NBA candidate at that point. Since then, you know, had the first injury, came back, wasn't quite himself, re-injured it, came back, and then has now been on a minutes restriction, which has limited some of his numbers. Though I also think you could look at a couple of games that like were clearly not his best, like the OKC game. But in general, I think for Austin, where I land is like, I also factor in his contract is, I mean, he's one of the best non-rookie scale contracts in the league. That's where like, I mean, I think he is outproducing LeBron just from a production standpoint. But if you factor in the contracts and that he's making almost, you know, a quarter of the amount of money that LeBron's making, like I factor that in a little bit as well. As a number two, I would probably give him an A minus. As a number three, I would give him an A plus. And I think coming into the season, we viewed him as a number three and we were optimistic about the jump he could take. But I think he's taken a leap that even I, as an Austin optimist, did not see him taking. Now, the big thing is going to be, and this is like the biggest attraction against him, you can look at some of these games against the more athletic teams, against the better defenses, and that's where he still needs to prove that he can be that caliber of player against those teams. So we think about San Antonio and OKC and Phoenix and some of these games where he has not been as sharp. I do think he's had some games against those types of teams, whether it was Minnesota or Toronto or Philly. Those teams have, I mean, like that Minnesota game, he had 28 and 16, hit the game-winning shot, and Jaden McDaniels was draped on him all game, and he was cooking Jaden McDaniels and Gobert in pick and roll. So I think he has passed some of the tests. He has not passed the highest tests, which to me will be OKC and San Antonio. So that's something I'm going to be monitoring here in the stretch run and potentially in the playoffs. But based on, I think, preseason expectations for him and his contract and just the context of everything, I think he's had an incredible season.
Yeah, so to me, it really just depends on whether or not you're talking about when he's on the floor versus when he's not. I ended up giving him a B-plus because of his availability. Like, he's missed 26 games this year. Like, that's a lot, it's a lot of time to miss. And again,
to be honest, I didn't factor in games missed for as much maybe for any of the players, right? But I guess that, but I guess I could have more and maybe docked everybody by like, you know, the next grade down.
To your point, both LeBron and Luka have missed a decent little chunk of games. LeBron just made himself ineligible for All-NBA. Luka, I think, is high risk for it over the course of the next couple of months. But Austin just for me, another level with him having missed 26 games. So that was that. But like, to me, when he's been available, I have him as an A+. Like, I don't think you can have much of a better season as a number two star than Austin has. Again, like, as a number one star, I'm going to look more at those bad performances against the good teams. Like, I put this in my notes. Like, he was mediocre in both Phoenix games. He was bad in both Oklahoma City games. He was bad the one time he played against the Spurs. Like, you're right. There are some wins in there. I think Minnesota's tricky because Jaden McDaniels is not capable of beating Austin to spots. One of the specific things with Austin that I've noticed that he struggles with is like the fire hydrant style guards that can beat him to spots. Then what happens is like he gets a little cute with his dribble and he can turn it over a little bit. And when the refs are not giving him his grifty calls, that can become a little bit of a problem. But to me, that would drop him off of an A+ if he was the best player on your team. But as a number two, when he's been available, you're just not getting that type of on-court value from a secondary star, really anywhere else in the league. 25, 5, and 6 is insane. 67% true shooting is how efficient Shea has been this year. That's like an off-the-charts number right there. You talked about the major upside in a feature role. Again, he's got a 51, a 44, and a 41 this year. 72% at the rim, which is like batshit for a small guard. The big one for me too, 41% on catch and shoot threes. That's why JJ has called him one of the best off-ball players on the team. Mm-hmm. I know this isn't saying much, but I think he's been one of the better defenders this year. I know that's not saying much, but like he's one of the guys who's
you said it, not me.
Exactly. In terms of game plan discipline, being in the right spots, like possession to possession, effort, energy, and focus, he's been one of their better guys this year on a team full of guys that have not had good seasons there. Again, this we're talking about a bottom 10 defense, right? The play type data is super strong. He's run 518 pick and rolls and ISOs, and he's getting 1.13 points per possession, which is the same as Luka, just obviously on lower volume. And so I think he's just had a fantastic season when he's been available. Again, the two things I'd nitpick is just find a way to stay on the floor. It's just such an important thing in the modern NBA. And then two, he's just got to kind of tie together how to have more consistent success against some of these tougher matchups for him. And, you know, generally speaking, Austin has conquered those things throughout his career. So I do think that he will eventually figure it out. I think he's made some headway. For instance, just in the first half against Oklahoma City, I thought he had a lot of success attacking. It was more like when he would kind of get cute with his dribble where he'd lose control. But overall, Austin, his rise is franchise altering because, you know, the hardest thing for you to find as a team is your top tier superstar. The Lakers have that. From there, the hardest thing to find is the complimentary star. And Luka in particular has a very specific type of complimentary star that he needs. And it looks like the Lakers have found him with Austin. So all in all, I consider this season to be a resounding success. Again, the only reason I'm giving him a B+ is because of his availability. Did you have anything else you wanted to add on Austin?
Oh, I also think it's worth mentioning that I thought the season took a turn for the worse when he went out.
Oh yeah. Right?
And like, I think we really saw his value that they went 10-9 in that 19 game stretch. And that was that was their worst basketball of the season. And there is an element here of roster construction, and this is a top heavy roster. So you take out any of the big three, and I think there is going to be a step back. But I also think in comparison with like LeBron, you look at the start of the season they had without LeBron versus the start or with just having two of the big three there. And then you look at the stretch where it was Luka and LeBron. And I think that they each missed maybe a couple games over that entire span. But still, I felt like to me, Austin's been their second best player, and to get that on a $14 million contract, I think that's been incredible value. I also think it's worth noting, and this will be something that just to monitor the rest of the season, right now, the best Luka two-man pairing is with Austin. So those two, I you add in LeBron and it becomes a negative net rating, and that's where the big three played 152 minutes and have a minus 10 net rating together. But those two specifically, that has been Luka's best two-man pairing this season. And so they passed a lot of the tests during the regular season. We'll see how they pass some of these statement tests in the stretch run here, how they pass in the playoffs. But I still remain optimistic on the Luka Austin pairing long term, assuming you nail the front court, which, as we discussed at the top, is going to be difficult. But that's the challenge this summer.
Yeah, it's easier said than done. But yeah, I'm 100% with you. I think like the Lakers have been able to weather losses of LeBron and Luka because they have redundancies there. Meaning like with LeBron, you've got a dude who can be a starting four. Is he good enough to be the starting four on a championship team? No, but is he good enough to be the starting four for LeBron, for 15, 20 games? Absolutely. Rui is right. Luka, his primary value add is shot creation, and the Lakers have a depth of shot creation. So when Luka's been out, Austin and LeBron have been able to fill those gaps, and they've been able to compete pretty well throughout this season. Austin, as we've talked about so much, he is the Laker one of the Lakers' best players in several key areas. Like on a team that sucks at catch and shoot play, he's one of their best catch and shoot players. On a team that has a bunch of really bad perimeter defenders, he's actually one of their better perimeter defenders. On a team that really sucks at generating dribble penetration, he's one of their best guys at actually generating dribble penetration, right? So like Austin, I'm so glad you pointed that out. Like I'd argue, even though obviously we know Luka is the best player, Austin very well may be the most valuable player in this construct specifically. Maybe that's not fair because of Luka, but certainly by far the most valuable non-Luka player on the team. And I think that was clearly on display. All right, we're going to have about 10 minutes worth of questions. I'm going to be looking at our super chats here. Give me 1 second. Our first one. What's up, guys? I was at last Mavs and Lakers game, and seeing old LeBron ball out in person was rad. Super bummed I couldn't see Luka or Flag. Lakers 26-27 champs if the summer goes well. I don't know about you, Jovan. I would be stunned if the Lakers won the championship next year. I think they're multiple cycles away, and I think they've got a hit on everything. So I'm a little more pessimistic. Where are you at with their potential to compete for a championship next season?
I would agree. I think that I may be a little bit more conservative in nature in terms of it's just hard for me to project. Like, I guess tell me what their roster is and I will tell you how confident I am in their ability to compete. But there's like versions of next year's roster where, as we discussed, they like run it back with LeBron and Rui and maybe like one small to mid-tier upgrade. There's maybe a different version where they add like one big piece and then only keep one of those guys. There's maybe a version where they keep neither of those guys and add like a big piece and then like maybe another small to medium piece. So I think it just depends on what they do this summer. I guess to the question, I do see a pathway to them being in that inner circle mix if they absolutely nail the summer, but I'm a bit more on the skeptical side of them nailing the summer. And I do think this is probably, to your point, a multi-transactional cycle thing where it's this summer, the deadline, and then probably 2027 offseason is when we go into 2027, 28, looking at them as like bona fide up there, potentially with OKC or whoever else is at the top of the league at that point. So I'm maybe a little bit more optimistic than you, but I think like just off the top of my head going into next season, I would assume that OKC, San Antonio, and Denver are at least ahead of them. And then, you know, maybe they're at like number four, but that's not even factoring in like Detroit, New York, Boston's getting Tatum Cleveland. Back, Indiana's yeah. getting Halliburton back. Like there's a lot of depth at the top of the league, but I could see them being like a top four or five team next season, but I will say I don't see a world realistically where they're like ahead of OKC in terms of being like the prohibitive favorite next
yeah, season. That seems borderline impossible. There's such a wide range of outcomes because when Jovan's talking about the Lakers potentially having $51 million in cap space if they trade the pick, that would be because that's in the universe where there's no players on the roster, right? So you got to fill out the roster full of players. So you got to think like we're talking multiple veteran minimums, possibly an exception, a mid-level exception, possibly a trade for a starting caliber player, possibly a restricted free agency target like Atari Eason. You know, there's a half dozen different major moves that are going to have to take place in this offseason. And so, yeah, if they hit on all of them, like if they nail a trade, let's say they nail a trade for Claxton and then they get Tari Eason and then they nail like a two or three exception signings, whether it's veteran minimum exception or mid-level exception signings, and you like get somehow like a Spencer Jones style, like quality rotation piece out of a two-way guy, and you convince LeBron to come back at a discount. Like if all that happens, like
it's a lot of ands there.
Yeah. We're talking about a championship contender, right? But like, yeah, again, it's like, I was talking about this yesterday with Cowherd on his show. Like it's doable, but like, he's got to go like 10 for 10 on his next 10 decisions, Rob. And like, that's just a lot to ask for a guy who like arguably has been missed a lot of these things over the last few years, right? So
agreed.
Again, I don't want to say there's no chance, but I do think it's a pretty small chance. Could the Warriors offer $30 million with Kristaps Porzingis' expiring contract to LeBron?
I don't think they're projected to have that much in cap space. I don't know off the top of my head, but I mean, you could do like a sign-in trade for LeBron, and then the Lakers would have to take on Porzingis, right? And I don't think they're going to want to take him on at a high number if they even take him on, period. But I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I ultimately think that LeBron going to Golden State would have to look like him going to Cleveland, him basically signing an exception. I will say I did see kind of a fun theoretical scenario, like what if the Warriors made a trade for Kawhi and then signed LeBron into an exception? That would be fun. But like ultimately, all these things are such long shots. I think we're most likely looking at a Lakers or Cleveland kind of situation or retiring. I think if LeBron gets hurt before the end of the year, he'll retire too. I think like it, you know, like him even coming back would require him looking good and healthy in the postseason.
Let's see. I mean, quickly looking at their cap, it's going to be
brutal.
Yeah, but I don't see it.
That Jimmy Butler albatross contract is just really tough.
Yeah.
Tim Harris stepping down today is very interesting. Rob on clock. I didn't see this. I didn't see Tim Harris step down. Rob on the clock. My guess is he retires this summer if things don't go well. PR release follows. I do know that in the Lakers book that I read this summer, Tim Harris caught some strays. So maybe that might have something to do with it. Do you have any intel on what went down with Tim?
No, I mean, this just happened while we were live. And my phone is actually connected to that's my camera right now.
Okay, gotcha. You're disconnected. You're not like Shams in the celebrity game.
I have some texts that I will get into after the show, but I remain skeptical that Rob is going to step down this summer. I think he's going to preside over at least next season, if not longer, and continue to reiterate that Dave McMenamin reported the next 5 years. So I don't know if I'd go so far as to say five more years, but I think everything he has said publicly has indicated, he just came out and said that he's going to be in charge of overseeing the revamping of the basketball ops this summer. I don't see how that would be changing at any point here. So I think it's tough to say. I mean, unless the Lakers just do absolutely nothing this summer, which technically is possible, but I think they're going to do at least like one thing. It's tough to say whether the summer was a success or not until we see what they look like in the regular season, right? I think we could have our opinions and we will probably have a good sense of like, did they add enough or did they not? But I think he would probably need into next offseason to really have any heat whatsoever. So I think he's going to be around for frankly, the next couple of years at least, but I know people are trying to push him out right now.
It bums me out to say, but I agree with you. I was thinking about this morning, actually, like specifically regarding like the Jordan Goodwin decision. Luka is a specific type of superstar that necessitates role player talent. Playing for a GM that seems to have no feel for that. So it's really unfortunate. No strays for Trevor. I'm going to vehemently disagree with the first part of this comment. But how can you see Adu long term with the Lakers? And if we, guys, I tripped all over myself in the intro, and I've been doing this for 5 years. We need Trevor.
We need Trevor to steer the ship.
We can't do this without Trevor. But how can you see Adu long term with the Lakers if we reach and if we can reach the conference finals this year? I think we can reach the conference finals. I would just be surprised. I think a successful playoff run for this team, given their expectations, is like win a series. I think if they won a series, I'd be pretty happy with that. As far as Adu goes, I have a really simple take. Like, I don't think he's anywhere close to being like an actual serious rotation player on a good team. I think he's years, like probably like kind of like Max Christie when he was a rookie. Like, we're talking 3-4 years before he can be really good. So like, you keep him and you develop him. But like, if you are in a bidding negotiation battle with New Orleans and they're like, you're on the 1 yard line, close the deal by including Adu or we're going somewhere else, then you include Adu. That's kind of how I feel about it.
I agree. I I think the Lakers like need that archetype, but I don't think, I mean, we've only seen him in flashes, so it's really hard to assess it in either direction. But I would say in the flashes that we've seen, he is really raw offensively. And I think there's a lot of overlap there with Vando. And if you just look at the best teams in the league, like some of them don't have an offensive liability at all, but some of them have like maybe one, and more so like perimeter liability, right? Because with the center spot, that's, I mean, nowadays centers are more skilled than ever, but like in general, you can kind of live with like your center being more paint bound, but it's more so like 1 through 4, you need those guys to be able to shoot at least at like a certain level. And I think Adu is clearly a ways away from being that type of player. And then you add in the Lakers in general are not a good shooting team. And they also have Vando playing a certain role right now. And I just think that there's a little bit too much overlap. However, I do think they've done a poor job of trying to develop him this season. And there have been stretches where they've been undermanned and they have shifted more toward a Nick Smith Jr. Or Bronny or whoever. And it's like, I get that to a degree, or Dalton. I think Dalton's the glaring one of just like the writing's on the wall with Dalton. He's not going to be a Laker for long.
They tried to give him away for free at the deadline and no one,
they could not trade him. They tried. So it's like develop a do, and you're going to take your lumps offensively, but he needs reps, and we can't really assess him until we see what he looks like with more reps. Part of me wonders how much this has been like a health thing with him, right? Where he's had the starts and stops this season. He has not been healthy, you know, entirely going back to when he initially had this knee surgery. So they've had him on a minutes restriction. They've been pretty conservative with how much they deploy him. At the same time, this has kind of been a trend with them, honestly, under multiple head coaches going back multiple years, where they just have struggled to develop their young talent. And I think that they're, especially if they keep talking about, like, you know, even in the ESPN report today, it was about like Luka's on board with this like longer term plan and vision for the roster. Okay, if you're not as concerned with the short term, if you're not as concerned with this season, then you need to be developing some guys and seeing if they're part of the future plan, or if maybe they pop and you could flip them in a deal, right? So, but like, I don't think Adu's trade value has improved since the Lakers drafted him. If anything, it's probably decreased just because of the knee situation. And it's like, you need to get that guy out there and develop him. So I think he's a ways away from being a rotation guy. I just also think that maybe he's not, but we just don't know because he hasn't really played. As for conference finals, I think it just depends on the bracket. If Denver drops, I think that could be a good thing for the Lakers. Like if the Lakers are the 5 seed and Denver's the 6 seed, now you're on the OKC side, but I don't know. I think there's a pathway to them, depending on how the bracket shakes out, getting to the conference finals. But realistically, I think they're going to be first round underdogs. And I think winning a series would be a success, just in the pure context of like the team and their overall talent.
I totally agree. These next two, I'm going to rip through really quick. Jay's going to take back his anti-Trevor comment, which I appreciate. We love Trevor over here, guys. Thank you. And then we talked about Palinka going out this summer in an earlier question. This next one, I'll just answer really quick. I get it. So Luka Doncic and Austin can pick their spots, defense or no defense, whatever, but LBJ at 41 should cover for what they can't and should take a massive pay cut as well. I get it. My only real counterpoint there would be the difference is Luka and Austin are both still elite shot creators. LeBron's best ability right now at his phase is he should be a Draymond-esque backline defender, rebounder type. And I do think he could be better there. And I think like it's more just a disbursement of resources at its purest level. Okay, two more and then we'll get out of here. Huge fan here. Keep it up. What are some around the margins moves you'd like to see ownership make for the team? I'm going to let you take this one, Jovan, because you could talk about all the organizational gaps for the Lakers.
Yeah, so I've talked about this before, but I think it needs to be quantity and quality. And for example, you know, there's multiple groups within basketball ops, right? So you have analytics, you have scouting, you have player development, and even within scouting, you have pro scouting, you have international scouting, you have the more traditional college scouting, you have the G League scouting. So within all these different facets of the basketball organization, The Lakers have made strides, I would say, over the last like 5 to 7 years, but they are still at best, I would say, like closer to league average and not like leading the way. And I think if you look at how Mark Walter and his ownership group have built out the Dodgers and what the Dodgers have been able to accomplish with, in baseball, I think you want to see the Lakers move more in that, I would say like OKC, Boston, Houston, San Antonio, some of the better front offices that are very analytically driven. I think that's the way that the Lakers, and also just developing a basketball ethos, right? Because we've joked about it on here, but if I ask you to describe what is a Lakers player and what is a commonality, what is a trait that the Lakers target in the draft or with their young players in the G League, whatever, I can't give you a clear answer. But if you go through the best organizations in the league, you can close your eyes and you could think about what does an OKC player look like? What does a San Antonio player look like? What does a Golden State player look like, right? Like Golden State, it's about playing with joy and you're supposed to have a certain basketball IQ and be like a pass first guy and fit in their system. And like there's just the Miami, right? Heat culture, all that stuff. There's just some organizations where they have clear identities that they've been building with or without their head coach, with or without their president of basketball operations, with or without their star player that they've had for quite a while. And I think the sooner the Lakers can get to that, I think the better. So in terms of this summer, I would say the priority is like hiring, like poaching the best people they can from different organizations and building out each group within the basketball ops. As you know, if maybe an average group has like 4 people in it, go get 5 or 6 people and really like beef it up again from both quality and quantity perspective. But then I also think it's about developing a culture and an actual identity with that, where 2 years from now when we're having this conversation, we can point to, hey, this is like a Lakers player, that this is what the Lakers believe in. And it's not just, you know, undersized combo guards who don't play defense. Like that's really the only thing I can point to is like a consistent transaction trend over the last few years. Other than that, it's like, I don't really know who a Lakers player is. And I think that the sooner they can get to that, the better.
Yeah. You know, I think no matter what happens when they make the changes they make over the next offseason or two, let's say to your point, they hire 20 new staffers at various levels throughout the front office. There needs to be like a big come to Jesus moment before next season where Rob or whoever the hell is in charge of the front office sits down and goes, what is Lakers basketball? What is Lakers basketball separate from Luka? What is Lakers? What are our basketball tenets? What are the things that if it's character, if it's motor, if it's, you know, if it's refined skill, whatever it is, find your tenets that you believe in the most and make them be the foundation with which you make all your basketball decisions. I think that that's really important. Last one before we get out of here, guys. Reeves continues to outshine his role. What, if any, developments could be next for his game in the 2026-27 season post-LeBron? I have just a couple quick ones. I think continuing to add muscle mass so he can be a little bit more resilient to some of the bully ball attacks like what he saw at the tail end of the Oklahoma City game. I also think ball handling security. Austin is one of the best handles in the league, and it's not exactly super uncommon for a really sharp handling player to have some turnover issues. Steph Curry is the main guy that I look at there as a guy who's got like really tight handle, but just can get a little too creative to the point where he can lose control of the ball. I think ball security and adding muscle mass are the two big ones. What do you think?
I would agree with both of those. I think this kind of gets into both against like the elite competition, the uber athletic, like he needs, like I would go find honestly like some of these guys in the summer and go train against them and like actually work on playing those guys like one-on-one and trying to, you know, develop counters and different things against and just being able to withstand that better. I think a big thing is and this is related I guess to the muscle mass, but like is his body. I think that's honestly my biggest question with Austin, in terms of we have seen some lower extremity injuries with him later in seasons. We've seen his jump shot tail off later in seasons. And I just wonder if like the 82 game grind, I sometimes wonder if that's like a little bit too much for his body. And really the only way to get over that, I think, is continuing to be in the gym and building that out and improving the foundation, I guess. But that would be my one thing. Like some of that stuff's been fluke stuff. So I don't want to like I'm not by any means indicating he's like injury prone, but I do think there has been, if you look at just his overall production, like later in seasons, with the exception of like the 2023 Western Conference Finals run, I would say some of the other seasons, it has tailed off a little bit. And that's where, if he is going to be this $40+ million guy, if he's going to potentially be the long-term number two, I do think you need that to stabilize, and you need an element of like reliability there at like a star level. Cause Austin's always going to contribute in a positive way. He rarely has like completely awful games. Like even some of his inefficient games or high turnover games, he finds other ways to contribute. He'll take a charge, he'll get a big stop or a rebound or whatever. I think he's constantly like a positive out there, but you need more than that from a guy making $40+ million, right? Like you need that dude to be every night 25-5-5 no matter what, in like a certain floor. So I think that's my thing I'm going to be looking at with him moving forward.
I think that's completely fair. To your point, he's not injury prone, but like, let's say he misses 26 games again next year, then I think it becomes a conversation, and that's a thing he can get in front of through his work in the weight room. All right, guys, that's all we have for today. As always, we appreciate you guys for rocking with us. You're stuck with just us two again on Thursday. We're going to kind of shift gears towards the role players and just talk about the main rotation guys for the Lakers and talk about how they've performed this year. And then back at it the following Monday with our game reaction style kind of breakdowns twice a week. And we'll be back to having all three of us by then. Again, as always, we appreciate you guys, and we will see you on Thursday.